Well, welcome everybody. I'm Dr. Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Podcast. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the podcast. I really do appreciate it. Finally, part two of existential therapy, the second podcast in the series, is finally coming out. You know, not trying to make excuses here, but I really didn't realize how much time it was going to take to put this class together that I've been teaching over the last few weeks. So I do apologize for getting this podcast out a little bit later, but it has been a whirlwind, and I'm just glad that I'm finally able to sit in front of this microphone and talk to you. So I hope you've been doing well since the last podcast. Thank you for the great, great feedback on part one of this series on existential psychotherapy, the introduction. It is episode 91. If you're listening today for the first time and you're saying, what the heck is he talking about? Don't panic. The way that I'm doing this is they're all self-contained episodes. So if you feel like going back, it might help you to get a broad overview, but each one of these podcasts can be listened in any kind of order. So I'm really glad that you are here. Now, I have to admit, I had started this podcast with a different topic. There's four main anxieties in the existential framework, and you know, I ended up doing about 40 minutes of recording, and I got right around 40 minutes, and I just looked up and said, this really is not a good recording. I was so frustrated. That was about a week ago, and I just had to walk away from it for a little while. So at a fresh new approach, I think this is the best way to go here. So today, what we're going to do is continue on our discussion. In existential therapy, we're going to talk about the concept of freedom. Freedom, where we think that it is always positive. Now, in case this is the first time you're listening to this series, in existential therapy, it's thought that all of our behavior really is motivated by four major concerns, ultimate concerns of existence. Every one of us deals with them. And those are meaning, what's going on in this world? Why am I here? Freedom, I have the choice, or do I, to take any decision that I want, but I am responsible for that. Isolation, the fact that we are alone and we have to deal with that, but yet want to be with people. And then finally, the last of the ultimate concerns are mortality and death. And it's those four concerns, those anxieties that really determine all of our behavior, at least according to the existential therapists, of which I really ascribe to that type of thought. So today we're going to start off with the concept of freedom, existential freedom. How can this be an anxiety, right? How is it that freedom, this concept of liberty, of being free, where we always think that that's positive, the whole world, everywhere you look, people are fighting for freedom. How can this be something that can cause us a tremendous amount of anxiety? And really here, under the existential framework, to understand how it dictates our behavior, is that freedom in the existential sense refers to an absence of external structure. And in that, it is full of anxiety. So what does that mean, Peter? What are you talking about? All right, let me give you an example. I really like using analogies to try and bring this home. You've got a cable box at home, right? Sitting there flipping through the channels, trying to figure out what you want to watch. So how many channels are on there? How many channels are on your cable box? Well, we're with Time Warner. There's got to be 500, 600 channels. Think about you not knowing what you wanted to watch on TV, and you had all of the channels to pick from. What would that feel like? No clue what you want to watch. I mean, nothing. Would you go through all of those? What would that be like, right? To pick one of those or scroll through all of them. How do you even begin that process, right? What do? Most of us, we've got about 6, 10 channels, 15 channels that we consistently watch. It doesn't matter that there's 500, 600 channels. We always kind of go to that group of channels. And here, I think that's an important analogy because that is the concept of freedom. That, if I can use that analogy, is what we're talking about in the existential sense. It's this feeling that we really are free to do whatever we want. Really. We can change our lives in any way we want right now. You can do it. I can do it. But in trying to do that, or actually trying to think about it, that puts all of the responsibility on us. There's no structure. Whatever we can imagine, whatever we can dream or do, or think, we can become. I'm not the first person to say that. But in that, if we want to move in that direction, a different direction, it is all our responsibility, our course to take, our path to write and determine what we want to do in our lives. And it is in that freedom that we realize that it's all up to us. We want that freedom, we crave it, but in that, at the same time, the ground below us is gone. And Dr. Yalom, who is one of the leaders in existential therapy, goes back to this issue of groundlessness. We're free to choose whatever we want, but once we realize that, then we've got to make the decisions and we've got to figure out the path, make the path. And that can be very, very anxiety provoking. In fact, the way Dr. Yalom talks about it in his book, Existential Psychotherapy, he states, quote, "The universe is contingent. Everything that is could have been created differently. And that the human being is not only free, but is doomed to freedom." End of quotes. So you see that desire that we have to want to be free, but also we want structure. I know that I can choose any of these cable channels, but I gotta know that there's about 10 or 15 that I'm going to go to, because if I've got to think about what's on every channel and make a decision, it's overwhelming. So this is the constant battle that we are fighting, at least within our minds and how we move through our days. I want the freedom, the autonomy to be able to choose any path. But if it's wide open, that makes me anxious because it's groundless below me. So I've got to have the structure. So how do we balance that? There are, at least in a psychological sense, implications for this freedom. Yalom said, it's groundless. There's no ground there, nothing, a void, an abyss. We have to carve out the course. And while we crave that freedom, too much of it terrifies us, any of us. Too much structure, though, and we feel too walled in, like we don't have any choices. And you see this balance, at least I see it in my sessions, when people come in and they might be faced with a particular decision, a career change, a relationship decision, something that they're unhappy with but feel they can't change. And really, I've said this before on the podcast, if you're a regular listener, those walls aren't made of concrete. They're made of paper, these walls that we put up for ourselves. And that's part of this freedom, is to understand that we can push on those walls and change our life. There are implications in doing that, but you can. You can. All of us can. So when we look at this existential issue of freedom, the tectonic plates, if you will, remember I've used that before, these earthquake plates that are pushing on each other back and forth in our mind, is this clash between confronting our freedom and that groundlessness, but then also wanting structure, wanting some of that ground, and how we balance that. How do we balance that to feel free, but it's that subjective experience of when we confront existential freedom that can be generated when we see that we are absolutely responsible for our whole life. Now, we don't think about it all the time. I mean, it's not something that goes on in our heads, at least on a conscious level. Maybe it's the first time you're hearing something like this. And what we see is it usually comes out during important times when we have made or are about to make big decisions, when we have faced a particular stress in our life where we know that change has to happen or a different way of thinking. We've all been there. And there becomes a moment where everything changes. Might be a decision on a career, starting a business, whatever it may be, or ending a relationship, or confronting someone about problems in a relationship. We feel like we can't do it, no matter what it is. Here are the reasons that I can't change. And they feel like they're solid. But when we do change, it goes from this thinking and wishing to action. And at least within the framework of existential therapy, that is the goal. The goal is to be able to get a person, at least give them just a little bit of a nudge to where they act. Myself, any therapist, can't make that decision. And ultimately, we don't. We don't make that decision, even though a person may feel, wow, you really helped me to make that decision. You make that decision. All of us do. It's an independent choice, no matter how we want to ascribe that to other people. But this awareness of the concept of freedom and us accepting that personal responsibility, it plays a critical role in all of our lives, and especially here in existential therapy. You are entirely responsible for your life, not just for your actions, but also your failures to act. This responsibility is all yours. It's up to you. No matter how we slice and dice it or try to deny it or place blame or guilt or something to somebody else, ultimately, it is our responsibility to chart the course for our life. Yalom says, quote, "To be aware of responsibility is to be aware of creating one's own self, destiny, life predicament, feelings, and if such is the case, one's own suffering." End of quotes. It can be frightening. It can be frightening to think about that freedom that we are the sole authors, the decisions that we make that we're responsible for. And it can be really unsettling. And it is that where Yalom had thought that people seek structure, authority, these larger designs, something that's bigger than ourselves to help make the decision or move some of the decision-making and responsibility away from us. But we are faced with that. We know that. All of us have been there. Certainly in my practice, where you see it coming about are during times of change or transition. Person's not happy with their job or their career, and they've got to consider everything and what do they do. Or in a marriage, people who are unhappy in their relationships, and how do they wrestle between acting or blaming somebody else or feeling that they are stuck. There's nothing I can do. I've got to stay in this marriage because of X, Y, Z. Children, responsibilities, or a career. I'm not happy. I know I need to make a change. This is not working. But, always those buts. What do I do? I'm not sure. What do I do next? What if I don't find a job? What if I can't make this change? I'm too old. I'm too young. Too many people are counting on me. No one's counting on me. We'll do what we need to kind of push ourselves away from that responsibility. But there's hope here because we are strong. You are strong. I ask you to think about those times in your life where you have hit a crossroads and it seemed insurmountable. The answer wasn't there. You weren't sure what to do. But you figured it out. Despite the doubt, despite the fear, and that is what gets in our way the most. You've heard me say that a lot here on The Healthy Mind. What gets in our way of moving towards the path that we want the most, and this includes yours truly speaking to you on this microphone, is our own fear and our own self-doubt. So we have to recognize, first off, be aware that it is our responsibility and our freedom to make those changes in our lives. But just to know that, just to have an awareness of that responsibility is not enough to implement, to move towards personal change. This is the big point here in terms of this. It isn't just realizing, okay, I am the author of my life, but it's really understanding the concept of your will, of your wishes, and your deciding, and then acting. It's through your will that freedom is enacted. Willing something, wanting it, making the decision, and then acting. Sure, you have to realize that you are the author of your life and the responsibility is all yours. And we may do a whole lot of things to either justify or rationalize these defense mechanisms that we use to push away from that reality that we really can make changes in our lives. But we also then have to act, and we do. We act and change. We have that free will. And this concept of free will is something that Dr. Yalom would come back to quite a bit, and especially as he felt this responsibility that we have, assuming it and then acting, in the existential framework seemed at odds with the traditional psychoanalytic Freudian thought at the time. He believes that we can change. We assume the responsibility, understand our will, and act. Whereas what he had felt in Freud was that all of our behaviors are already determined. We don't move through stages properly, or we are beholden to these drives within us. And all of our action is already determined. Do we have any free will there? I love some of the way he explains it, because it's a critical distinction here between the existential method and some of the traditional analytic. And I don't say this to be critical or to be in any way insulting to psychoanalysis. I say this in the spirit of understanding what the distinctions are between these two fields of thought. Keep in mind, a lot of existential therapy, its basis comes from the work of Freud and analysis. But there are some fundamental differences here, and this idea of determinism versus will and action is one of them. Listen to how Dr. Yalom talks about this. This is from a book back in 1980 about this idea of assuming responsibility versus some of the Freudian thinking. Quote, "The therapist who adopts a scientific deterministic position in clinical work soon encounters a serious problem. In a model of man subdivided into such interrelating but conflicting factions such as ego, superego, and id, where does the ultimate seat of responsibility lie?" End of quotes. He really wants people to think here. He says that if we are determined, if everything is based on the past and our drives, then if there's not like a driver here of this car, then what is it that can try harder? Who is that person that tries harder and tries to get past? Where does courage come into this? Or how are you resolute or resilient and push through? How is that possible if everything is determined? And this is where he took serious issue with the psychoanalytic model. Listen to what he says in this passage. Quote, "The superego, the id, the ego, these archetypes, the idealized and the actual selves, the pride system, the self system and the dissociated system, the masculine protest, parent, child, and adult ego states, none of these really exists. They're all fictions, all psychological constructs created for semantic convenience, and they justify their existence by virtue of their explanatory power." End of quotes. In this framework of existential therapy, this construct of our will, it's that part of us, that emotional, that mental part of us that transforms the awareness and the knowledge that we are truly responsible for our actions into action, into change. It's not an easy thing. We have to go to the precipice, if you will, of these anxieties like existential freedom. And if people aren't able to get to that point for whatever reason, they're not going to be able to take that responsibility and act. We see it. We see it all the time. You felt it. I felt it. Fear, self-doubt, worry, guilt. They get in the way of us actualizing what we want to be. We have to be careful because a lot of this may have already been patterned over a lifetime. As kids, stay in the lines. Don't do too much outside of the norm. Don't try to be a radical. Don't try and buck the system. And we feel like we can't affect a change. We always have to question, always, ourselves. Why not? Why can't we do this? Why shouldn't I do this? I'm not saying be an anarchist, but any kind of dogma, we have to question. Question everything that I say. But we have to do that. And what happens is sometimes these messages that we can't or we shouldn't get in the way. So when we try to act, we feel guilty. We feel uncertain. Or we feel doubt that we can really make that change that we want. So, how do we find our potential, right? How do we even recognize the will and the action and our potential? How do we recognize it? Or how do we know when we've lost our way, that what we're doing isn't right? And the way that Yalom described it, and I think it's a really beautiful way that everyone can relate to, it is a deep awareness that we aren't living up to our full potential. That gnawing feeling, you know it. That gnawing feeling that something is wrong. Something is not working out. This isn't where you want to be, no matter what the issue is, whether it's a general feeling of your life in general, or a job, or a relationship. That deep awareness that we're not living the life that we want. Yalom sums it up very nicely when he says, quote, "The discrepancy between what one is and what one could be generates a flood of self-contempt with which the individual must cope with throughout life." End of quotes. But it's not all bad. These negative feelings, this guilt, really holds the potential for change. It motivates kind of the Emerson's quote, "Every wall is a door." We face that. Something is wrong. It may feel very imposing or scary, but it can also, and oftentimes is, that discomfort, the reason that we begin to change. Now, there's a whole lot of different ways we deal with this concept of freedom and this anxiety that comes from the groundlessness. We want structure, but not too much, but we also want freedom. But gosh, do you know what it means if we're responsible for everything? But responsibility assumption, assuming that responsibility is what leads to success, certainly what leads to success in existential therapy. an avoidance of responsibility is so difficult, not only for mental health, but also for our physical health. And in this, people will do what they need to deal with these anxieties when we are faced with this concept of existential freedom and responsibility. Whole bunch of different ways that we deal with it. Defense mechanisms, if you will. One of them, displacement of responsibility. Someone else is going to help me make the decision or is going to be responsible for making the decision. A partner, family, parents, maybe an institution or a religion, or even the therapist. An interesting one, which we see and kind of ties in to my area of interest within how emotions can create pain, is this idea of compulsivity, compulsions and obsessions that are defense mechanisms. It's the creation of this world that the obsessions and the compulsions act as a necessary distraction that you take refuge in as a shelter from the anxiety, but they're not healthy. Things like sexual addiction or gambling, eating too much, spending too much. And here I would argue even things like physical pain. Classic type of understanding of this psychophysiologic disorder in which the pain itself serves as a necessary refuge away from these deeper existential anxieties. Kind of in essence, I'd rather have physical pain than deal with the potential of opening up the scab of that emotional pain. Compulsivity. Another way that we deal with it is to deny our responsibility, using denial, avoiding the autonomy, avoiding this issue of freedom and taking responsibility. Might be the innocent victim. It wasn't me. I can't help it. It's their fault. I'm stuck in this marriage. I've got kids. That's why I can't get out. Or my family's fault. Or there's just too many barriers in being able to make a change in my job, not owning up to the responsibility, the challenges, and the work that has to be done. Denial. Other defense mechanisms are staying in the status quo, staying in dysfunctional relationships even though they're bad, staying at a bad job even though you know you need to get out of it. Deadening ourselves to our desires or our wishes, not allowing ourselves to even wish or desire something different. Deadening. Terrible. It's tragic when that happens. And a denial of all of our feelings, denying what is right in front of us. Something is wrong, and I need to change. And part of the reason I don't change is because changing means I have to assume the responsibility and chart out the course for myself. It's a universal anxiety, though. This is where the solace comes in. Every one of us faces that in our own unique way through the course of our lives. And there is some solace in that, I really do believe. So within the existential framework and existential therapy, the focus is much less on the past. Not that it's not important, but we don't go to the past as much. The goal is on, you stay on the future and the goals that lie ahead. The past is so subject to change. I mean, modern science is starting to prove this as true. The memories that we have right now, that you have right now, will change. The actual details of it, they'll change due to the emotional state that you're in where you recall that memory, whether you're in a good mood or a bad mood. And we're always editing these memories, and they mold to fit us. They're not as fixed as we think, like a hard drive, and that memory is there and it never changes. They're shaping, and science is only now starting to understand first that it happens and how and why it happens. So the past can be a bit elusive in terms of what really is there. How do we really understand it? The fact that I'll understand some of my past memories 10 years from now, perhaps in a very different way than I do right now. For the existential therapist, the most potent methods that are available is analyzing the current behavior. And in current, I mean current in the therapy. From this information, you can show an individual how they recreate in the therapy situation the same situations that they face in their life, the ways that they avoid or assume responsibility, the fears that they have, whether it is in their isolation or meaning or their mortality and death. In real life, real time, there's a wealth there to help a person understand and move through the difficulties in their life. Now, you want to help facilitate or have a person become responsible, but you've got to be careful. You've got to be careful as a therapist. You don't want to be too active, take too active of a role, because you don't want to take over for the individual that you are treating. This merging, right? The person merges with you or displaces the responsibility to you. You're not really helping a person when you're too active. But you've got to be careful, because being too passive may lead a person to feel a bit more helpless or tie into those issues of helplessness within the individual. You always have to be aware and strike that balance with being active and involved and engaged with the person, knowing when to slow down and pull away, and not being too passive because you could hurt them in that way. But before we begin in helping other people, we have to examine our own beliefs about responsibility and arrive at a consistent position within our lives and what we believe. But we believe in assuming responsibility, free will, and our action. You cannot patronize someone. People are so smart. You can't have a double standard in which you're saying this is what you should do, but you don't believe it or you don't act it in your life. Double standards don't work. They don't work in any relationship, and they will not work in the therapy session. If you're trying to push an ideology which either you question or don't believe is true within your own life. So here, kind of in summary, in terms of what we are trying to do within the existential framework, is that our goal is to bring the individual to the point where he or she can make a free choice. Assume the responsibility and then make a free choice. Realizing that this concept of existential freedom is an ultimate concern. All of us face it, and it is always this challenge between our absolute freedom to chart out any course which we deem. We have that right, and we have that ability, that freedom. We have to assume the responsibility, though, for our own lives. And just because we recognize and are aware of that responsibility and freedom, it's not enough. We've got to get a person to the point where they can make a free choice. You help a person recognize the process of choosing, and you concentrate on increasing awareness that this individual is faced with choice and they can't escape freedom. None of us can. But it doesn't have to be terrifying, and it becomes therapeutic every time we do it. You know what that's like because you have faced it in your own way in your life, those difficult challenges where you've had to make important decisions and your life has gotten better. All of us have. Whether it's a career, marriage, children, whatever it is, we've pushed up against our anxieties, and then we've plowed through. That's what we have to revitalize in therapy, in the therapy session. But we have to realize our limitations as therapists. We can't create nor infuse a person's will to act, but we can liberate it. That's it. We try and get some of these barriers out of the way, some of the defense mechanisms, some of the fears, some of the doubts. And the way that we do that in therapy, part of it is to always ground the person and recognize that this is a struggle that is part of the human condition. That I face those issues as much as the person I am privileged to treat. This is where there is that equality in existential therapy, in that approach. We're all human. We're all trying to get through the day. We're all trying to survive. And we all face these issues in our own unique and beautiful ways. Our goal as therapists, and this is what exactly I told the residents in the class that I'm teaching, that ultimately became this podcast, one of the classes, is that our goal is to reinforce the inherent strength, the resilience, and the potential for change in every individual. It's there. We help to shine it up to the light of day for them to see. For them to see their potential, for them to realize that it is part of the human condition, not a fatal flaw, not a weakness, that they feel the anxiety of freedom, the terror of freedom, but also to let them know that there is beauty in moving through that fear to will and then to action. In a caring, compassionate, and safe environment, the therapeutic relationship, not even, if at all, the particular therapy technique, but the relationship hopes to light a fuse in that individual where they move from fear and doubt to decision and change. And it happens. You can be thanked as a therapist that you helped a person so much to change and to make those decisions. Have the humility to realize you didn't do it. You didn't do it. All you did was, by virtue of your relationship, was allow a person to realize their potential, their strength, their dreams, their wishes, and then, for whatever reason, and maybe there's a small part of it that has to do with us, but it changes and it moves to an individual being able to act and make tremendous, tremendous change in their lives. And it is awesome. It is beautiful. And it is a privilege and honor. It really is, to see a person believe in themselves and see their potential and then act. Be careful to own too much of that as something that you did as a therapist. It feels good and it feeds our own sense of meaning and purpose, but that individual made that change. The concept of freedom can be very daunting and scary for all of us. But especially within existential therapy, it is part of the ultimate anxieties that motivate all of us. But in that, we cross that Rubicon. We move through that anxiety, no matter how terrified we are, and we grow. And that is the power of freedom and the will to act, that allows us to reach incredible heights and incredible successes in our lives. It is that potential inside of every one of us. Don't ever doubt that. And don't ever doubt how truly powerful you are, because you are. And here on The Healthy Mind, that is the goal. The goal is to consistently but authentically and genuinely continue to show you that and prove it to you. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's podcast. It was a lot of fun to put this together for you. You're starting to get a sense, the first of the four ultimate concerns, freedom. We'll be going down the list here with meaning, isolation, and our mortality in this series. So by the end, when you've gotten all of these, you're really going to have a good sense of existential therapy and what it is all about. So I hope that you enjoyed it. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the podcast. I really do appreciate it. A special thanks to those of you who have sent the warm comments and letters of support through email and have also have tweeted me. Don't forget, you can listen to this and any of the previous episodes of The Healthy Mind with Dr. Zafiridis on iTunes. If the spirit moves you, you can really support the podcast by rating it. Leave a quick comment. I'd really appreciate it. You have no idea what a rating on iTunes does for the scope and the reach of the podcast and everything I'm trying to achieve. The website, as always, thehealthymind.com. I tweet at Dr. Zafiridis, and any questions, comments, anything, I want to hear from you. So don't hesitate to get in touch with me. The email address, peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And for the Healthy Mind podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Network, I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody. And I'll see you next time right here on the Healthy Mind.